Hey everybody, welcome to Caffeination 370. This is the yet, as of yet, untitled edition here at the Caffeination. We usually try and write the title beforehand, and it just hasn't been working out too well for us in the past couple episodes, so we're going to try something different. We're just going to see what happens, and hopefully you'll find the title by the time you come to listen to the show. Alright, this is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high-octane world of tunes and tech, all things caffeine and technology. So it's going to be a fun show that we got going for you here today. Hopefully you have had a great weekend. Ours has been somewhat somber. There's just a whole lot of strange things going on in the caffeination layer, as the case may be. So we're going to leave all that behind, leave all the downers, and leave everything else out of the way. And we're going to bring you plenty of fun and interesting news about technology, about caffeine culture, about wine, about Legos, about a whole ton of different things. Cake and coffee, cupcakes, ghost sharks, green coffee, green tea, Jedis, Legos, Star Wars, tattoos, tea, and wine. So it's going to be an interesting little hodgepodge episode, as per usual here at the Caffeination Podcast. We have a full three sections coming at you: news in brief, geek cruft, and food and caffeinated bits. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about. We don't want to waste too much time. Did want to make mention, of course, if you were looking for this episode, you can find it lovingly nestled along with all of its other episodic friends over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com for those of you who are hard of spelling. All right, if you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, please feel free to send it right off to caffeination@gmail.com. That's also how you get on the mailing list for this intrepid show. If you'd like to receive the show notes, the shouts, as some shows call them, direct to your email every time a episode is posted. Please feel free to fire one off to caffeination@gmail.com, and I will do my best to get you all updated in that. We had a brief attempt at trying to play around with a mailing list, like an official real-world integrated mailing list with WordPress, and that really didn't work out. So we're back to the good old BCC field. So it's very easy to kind of manage everything this way. There's a whole bunch of other fun little things that you can find out by going on over to caffeination.com. For instance, how to leave us a voicemail, how to comment directly on the posts. You can also become a friend of the show over at, if you click on the Friends of Caffeination button, it allows you to sign in with your OpenID, Google, AIM, or Yahoo, and comment with that identity. You don't have to do an extra little sign-in. It's a fun way of joining up to the show and linking up that way. All right. Before we get too much further with today's show is brought to you in part by GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a great easy way to host meetings. It's incredibly easy for anybody to set up. You don't have to have your tech guy come down and do it. You can do it from your home, your office, wherever you happen to be, and it allows you to really condense your schedule. You don't have to worry about hours and hours of travel that get in your way. You and your attendees can join meetings in absolutely seconds. You can you don't have to bother setting up meetings, attaching video feeds or webcams. Everything just works. Attendees don't even have to have their own account for the software. As long as you, the vendor, have your account, you are perfectly fine. Simple features: this thing has easy ways to share keyboards and mouse controls or switch presenters no matter where the people are. We've had presentations of tech podcasts where people are from one end of the country to the other, even out to Hawaii, and it's always seamless. It's always beautiful when you finally view the final thing. So I highly suggest you head on over to www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts to receive your free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of crazy and cool, fun things that we're doing here. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening in the background that I'm hoping is not going to come up to the forefront here on the episode. It seems that no matter what I do, no matter how calm the animals are in our house, no matter how sedate the circus is, as soon as I attempt to start recording an episode, all whatever breaks loose. I mean, we have cats and dogs fighting. We have iguanas jumping around the cage. I mean, everything's kind of condensed down into one small area whenever it seems like everybody likes to be near me. So if I'm upstairs, the dog's upstairs, and then the cats follow upstairs, and then the dog chases the cats, and then it's all kinds of craziness. The same thing is happening for now that I'm down in the lair. The iguana's right next to the computer. There's a whole bunch of crazy things that are happening, and every time the iguana moves, the dog barks. So we're going to try and keep that all out out of the audio here. We're going to start right off with news and brief. Again, we're going to be talking about PodCamp Philly. We would love to thank Blueberry for sponsoring PodCamp Philly, along with Springhouse, Social Media Club, Microsoft, and Real Networks, and Temple University, the place where it's being hosted. I have a very vested interest in PodCamp Philly, being that I love podcasting. I'm incredibly passionate about it. I've had wonderful times at all the other events that are out there, and I also happen to work at Temple University and one of the organizers for this year's event as well. So I highly suggest that if you are in a similar situation to me, you might not have to work at Temple University, and you don't have to necessarily be a absolute fanatic about podcasting, but I would suggest that you head on down to podcampphilly.com and you register for the event. It's only $21. You get 2 days of lectures from some of the best and brightest minds in social media and podcasting, and I might even speak a little bit too. So it's going to be kind of fun. I'm going to be attempting to record my sessions. Last year that didn't work out too well because battery life is a little bit of an Achilles heel of being a truly well-heeled geek. So, last year it didn't work out too well, but I'm going to be recording the sessions that I'm working in on this year, and this year I'm going to have some extra batteries and make sure that I check everything out while I do it, all right? So remember, PodCampPhilly.com. It's October 3rd and 4th at the lovely Temple University. So, all right, we have a ton of cool stuff. We're going to head on in. We're kind of switching things up. News and Brief is going to be a lot of the quick little throw-out articles that I do a lot. Geek Cruft is going to be a little bit more of the heady stuff, some of the stuff I'd like to discuss a little bit more often. Food and caffeinated bits, obviously it's a little bit self-explanatory, but hey, it's not only caffeinated food, but it's also food because I just love food in general. I eat like it's my job some days, so... All right, moving right along. Light designed by LEGO. This is actually an official branded LEGO Minfig light. You heard me here correctly. Imagine a LEGO Minfig holding a what appears to be a bar over his head, but it's actually a handle for a lantern. The chest of the Minfig is white. That's because that's where the lantern is. I have no idea how it actually works, but apparently it says there's 4 ultra-white bright LEDs. I don't know how I would actually if I had to redesign something, like, I always look at these products like, okay, if I have to redesign something, how would I do it? Where's the design deficiency in here? Part of the, I guess, iconic nature of the LEGO Minfig, or the tiny little LEGO figures, is that I think partially their dress, so I'm not really sure that the white shirt is entirely perfect in this case. I think, you know, maybe they could have done something else, but I don't know. I guess the glowing head probably would have put people off, but... I think that there's a lot of room for interest in this. You could always use a Sharpie and actually draw an extra costume on top of it so the costume itself would glow. I think that would be pretty cool. They have other ones that are out there as well. Like, for instance, they have a brick light, which is one of the click lights that you see in Walmart or something like that, that is just a little 2x2 Lego brick. They also have a clip-on pocket light, which is a little Lego Minfig with one light in one of his feet. They also have one where you can strap to your head. Same deal, different leg, apparently. So it's interesting, but I don't really understand why it would just be in one of his feet. I think it would be kind of cooler if it was the top of his head. That's just me. All right, moving right along. Star Wars Jedi bathrobes. These are fantastic. They're $95 a piece, unfortunately. No word yet on exactly how tall they are. I'm not a short gentleman, but I do notice that most bathrobes are probably fit for guys that are around like 5'7", 5'8", at the most. Anything else, and like you have a bathrobe that ends up coming up to your knees. So I'm looking at these and go, man, I really wish I knew how tall they were. They really look kind of cool. They're a lovely little brown with a deep cowled hood. And these aren't the bathers you're looking for, is the only kind of joke that I could come up with this. But they have an interesting little, I think it's a faux leather belt, because I don't really think real leather would work too well in a bath style environment. So I thought that was pretty cool. Now we have a geek black hole. There's nothing else to describe this. It's Star Wars, it's Legos, it's USB drives all in one tiny little thing. The fine folks from over at Databrick have managed to create 2 different little Lego sticks. One's 2 gig, one's 4 gig. They have both characters in each. One's a little Lego Minfig Yoda, the other one's a Lego Minfig Darth Vader, which is probably the one that I would get. The only thing is, it's $60 for the 2 gigs, I believe. They only have one price, but they have 2 different products up there. You know, they have the 2 gig and the 4 gig. I would probably not think that they would both be the same price, but who knows? I really like the Lego Darth Vader. I think the Lego Yoda is a little bit overdone, and it's a little bit off scale, because you can have a little Lego Yoda next to a little Lego Darth Vader, and they're not supposed to be the same height. Darth Vader's 6'4", at least the fine folks over at Soul Calibur actually got that correctly. When you have both characters in the game, Yoda's a tiny little midget character, and Darth Vader's a giant hulking Sith warlord, so it's kind of fun and cool. Alright, moving right along to the fine folks over at Wired. Freaky new ghost shark is off the California coast. Apparently there's an entire collection, an entire breed of different sharks that are just called chimeras, after the mythological creatures that have parts of different animals. These things are not entirely a shark, so they're probably some form of transitional species. The problems with sharks as they are is that there's very little, if any, evidence of them in the fossil record, because they're all cartilaginous. They have entirely cartilage skeletons. So, cartilage doesn't preserve well. That's kind of one of the problems with it. So the fossil record for sharks is a little bit harder to find, except for the fact that the teeth always seem to find their way around. So I know that, you know, there's jaw bones and everything, but overall the entire fish is pretty hard to it's not even a fish really, I don't think, but when you get really deep into the bowels of biology and you're trying to figure everything out and say, okay, this is a subset of that, which is a subset of this, every once in a while, you kind of just got to step back and look at something like this and say, okay, that's just plain weird. When I was originally looking at this thing, I was like, hey, man, that's pretty freaky. Turns out that this was actually a formaldehyde preserved species subject, and they actually have live versions that they've caught on camera in the Monterey Bay coast in or Monterey Bay in Southern California, which is just crazy. I mean, this is this ranks right up there, I think, with the colcolith, or the however exactly you pronounce it. I'm horrible with pronouncing things. It's probably my third greatest geek shame. I can't pronounce anything correctly right off the bat. I have to hear somebody else do it correctly. I've heard coelacanth. I've heard all kinds of crazy things. But basically, it's the fish with it's the lobe-finned fish. It's the fish that has almost legs. It's a transitional species that was thought to have been extinct for over 50 million years until people started catching it off the coast of Africa. So go figure, they had to kind of rewrite some stuff, which is kind of fun and cool. All right, next little thing that we have for you here is a little article from over at Hackaday.com. It's a backlit clock. Now, what I like about this is that somebody actually was looking at an industrial design website and saw some overly priced piece of industrial design where it's basically a flat metal sheet that has different letters kind of laser cut out of it. And inside each one of the laser cuts, so the top line says ITRISUHALFTEN. So it's nonsense words when you really look at them, but what it does is the system actually backlits certain letters within the different things, and it's several letters across, and it's 9 rows tall. So it's interesting because it backlits different things to tell you the time. So right now on the picture they have, it says it is 20 minutes to 8. So they also say it can say, you know, this minutes past 5 or past this. They have a clock in there. There's a whole bunch of strange things. But the cool thing about Hackaday and Instructables, where they're talking about the story from, is that both sites are very much open in how they create things. So the person went to the industrial design exhibit, saw this, and said, hey, you know what? I bet I could do that. Comes back home, talks to a couple people, and works on a different hand-cut PCB that he toner etched. So he did the entire thing, basically printed it out on a laser printer or a inkjet printer, and put a whole bunch of little interesting microcontrollers and 120 ultra-bright LEDs and made his own clock. And he put instructions on how to do it all up online. So you could too if you were really into it. So that's pretty cool. And moving right along to the next thing, MRIs should all be read this way. I gotta tell you, one of the times where I was looking at an MRI of myself, another time I was looking at an MRI of my wife, we're trying to figure out, because they have, you know, literally dozens of images in there, and they're all of different little places, and you're saying, okay, the organs look really weird in plan view. They look really weird if you're not used to seeing them. So where exactly am I in the body so that I know what I'm looking at exactly? A gentleman by the name of Bill Moorier, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, actually had somewhat of a similar issue. He was looking at an MRI of his head and said, you know what? All these are is different little sections going backwards and forwards and frontwards and down. So what he decided to do was actually build a little flash program that put them all together and then take a lovely little picture of himself, both sideways profile shot and mugshot style straight on. And as you browse through the different little pieces of... As you browse through the different little pieces of the MRIs, you can actually see where exactly you're pointing to inside the guy's head. That is brilliant. That is perfect. They should have done this long ago. It's a way of putting all these images together so that anybody, even lay people, can actually understand what exactly is being looked at. They don't have to, you know, this isn't a way of giving medical information to people and allowing them to diagnose themselves, because obviously you're not going to be able to walk into an MRI place and say, hey, you know what, just for fun, could you do this for me? There's plenty of other things that are out there, but you know, this is an interesting way to kind of educate people and say, okay, this is exactly what we're looking at. So when they go back later on and they look at the MRIs themselves, oh, that's where that was. Or yes, that is a fatty liver and that's not just my spine. Who knows? But all right, that about wraps it up for the news in brief, which was not so brief this time, so... everything's a work in progress around here. All right, moving right along to Little Dog the Robot. If you remember a while ago, we had a military robot called Big Dog that was able to carry around 400 pounds, that was able to carry, I think, around a ton of equipment through battlefields and everything. It had an interesting little fuzzy logic circuit, and it was pretty much impossible to knock down. So now what the company is working on is actually a version called the Little Dog, and it works on the same fuzzy logic circuits, and I'm pretty sure they're just trying to increase maneuverability. The thing is slow as absolutely anything, but there's some really funny videos they have up there, and the more you look at it, you say, okay, wow, that's really ridiculous. The thing can't even walk over a little wall. Then you find out that it actually learned how to walk over the little wall, and then you realize that it actually was able to bridge a gap between two different little things by walking on tiny little pegs, and it moved beyond what you would normally be able to do into something that's like, okay, yeah, I can step over a curb if I have to continue walking. But now you're migrating across, like, you know, tall little poles, like from the movie Remo Williams or something. So it's pretty kind of funny and crazy here to see exactly what the thing is capable of. And I wonder exactly what the applications would be in military science or beyond for a robot that's this small and this slow. I mean, I understand it's probably more in the lines of actually working on the logic behind it, because, I mean, once you get all the logic worked out for the beast, then you can probably just transport the code into the big thing, and then you're heads and tails above where you were before. So, who knows? But I just thought it was pretty cool and wanted to pass it along. Next little thing that we have up for you here, fungus that breeds beautiful music. Now, if you are any type of person who's interested in music, specifically violins, you will know that a Stradivarius is probably one of the world's most sought-after instruments. They're several hundred years old. They're incredibly rare. They're all made by one person, that is Stradivarius himself, and the wood harvested at the time when he was making violins had very, very unique characteristics. Some say that there was like a mini ice age, which provided uniform wood density. Others say that there was... That the wood was actually less dense but more uniform overall. There's strange things, even like the resin that he used. So pretty much uniformly, these are considered probably one of the best violins that you could buy for whatever money that you had available. Well, a bunch of researchers have actually tried to find a way to actually recreate the sound of the Stradivarius, and they've been doing this for hundreds of years since Stradivarius himself stopped making violins. And one of the ways that they've actually found to kind of get close to the sound is actually allowing a soft rotting fungus to actually infect some of the wood that they were going to be using. Apparently the lighter density wood did not lose any firmness, and it actually scored much higher in a listening test. What this is, you know, they had a whole bunch of people arbitrarily pick out which violin out of five being played was actually the Stradivarius, or actually sounded the best. They didn't even say that. There was one Stradivarius, and there were four violins of identical nature. The only thing is, two of those violins had actually been treated with the fungus, one longer than the other, so there was, you know, a total of five violins of five different tonal qualities. And, you know, resonance is a very hard thing to kind of duplicate. And Stradivarius kind of hit upon a very interesting and very unique signature tone throughout the creation of his instruments. And it's been sought after ever since. The funny thing about this is that the fungus-treated wood actually scored much higher. A lot of people in different comment sections from different blogs that I've been reading about this actually have noted that, you know, this is a pretty much like a blind taste test, and they're notoriously inaccurate because people's ears are very subjective. So they said even when they had a regular modern violin several years ago, they did a similar test where it was a Stradivarius versus a regular high-quality modern violin. More people actually chose the regular high-quality modern violin than the Stradivarius. So who knows? I think it's a relatively interesting and cool that they were actually still trying to replicate this man's instrument several hundred years after his passing. So, all right, moving on to a story from TechCrunch. I love Pandora Radio. I don't think I've talked about it enough here on the podcast, but there's an interesting little piece that was actually written about Tim Westgern, the founder of Pandora, and how his openness about a lot of the situations, a lot of the trials and tribulations facing the company actually is one of the reasons that the company has recently entered into profitability. By him being so open about a lot of the trials and tribulations they faced becoming an internet music company and facing the RIAA and facing a whole bunch of the other issues that they did, it allowed a very passionate user base to actually go back to the people who made policy and say, hey, you know what, basically we love this service, why are you basically single-handedly trying to crash it down by doubling and tripling the royalty rates for things played online versus other things. There's a lot of very interesting and twisted ways in which the RIAA and a lot of the other licensing bodies for music and other things that are out there have really kind of pulled different strings within government to get money out. And for the longest time, there was the DRM solution was actually being put out there, said, hey, you can't have anything out there like that that doesn't use DRM because you're diluting the potential pool of people who would buy the music. And then after that didn't work so well, and even though they're still pushing it now, they had things like, okay, well, you know, since you're playing it online and since it's potential to be ripped off by absolutely anybody, what we want is we want incredibly and prohibitively high royalty rates. So they were trying to force Pandora and other institutions like it off the air. So by putting a lovely bug in the ear of the passionate consumers who are interested in Pandora, and by changing their revenue stream, whereas they're limiting the free access to 40 hours per month, which I still haven't hit, and they say if you hit that and you still want to continue listening, it's only 99 cents. That's fantastic. I will gladly pony up every month if I listen more than that. So it's really kind of an interesting little piece that they have over at TechCrunch, so I will highly suggest you head on over there and check that out. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is not necessarily a little thing, it's a huge discovery that's out there. There has been water found on the moon. Now, I'm a little bit skeptical at this because they're recently finding water in all these celestial bodies that are out there, and they're saying, hey, there might be subterranean ice in different areas. And I understand that a lot of the different tools that they're using are well beyond the layman, and I understand that I'm not going to be able to actually pick out all of the different nuances of what people are trying to tell us. But basically, NASA said that on three separate scans of three different sets of instruments, they've revealed the presence of what they call hydroxyl molecules, which is hydrogen and oxygen, and that basically boils down to being H2O, or some derivation thereof. They're saying that there's even trace amounts of it in the actual lunar soil itself, as well as a large subterranean, but it's a... I don't know if Terra still works there, because Terra technically means Earth, and if you're not on Earth, is it still Terra that you're subbing? But what they're basically saying is that under this actual soil, there's a lot of buried ice. And it might not be a large amount, but it's possible that it might be used for actually creating fuel, among a whole bunch of other things, even colonizing the moon. So despite the fact that science fiction had long since written off colonizing someplace like the moon, who knows, maybe we could even terraform planets like this. So it's going to be fun to sit there and play around. I mean, it's kind of funny to think that in the past, I guess, 10 years, our understanding of extraterrestrial bodies has kind of grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, with the Mars rovers and them finding ice and different voyages beyond our atmosphere, it's just kind of strange to really think about how much more knowledge that we have now than we did even a decade ago about this kind of stuff. So, all right, moving right on to the next little thing that we got for you here. We're kind of falling behind here. AT&T calls Google a hypocrite on net neutrality. Basically, AT&T is calling out Google because their Google Voice service refuses to deliver phone calls to certain phone numbers. Now, I was unaware of this. I use Google Voice kind of extensively for I use it for the phone line to call into the podcast. I use it for the business line that I use off to the side of that, and I love it. I really think it's a great service. I especially like the feature where you can get a transcript of the voicemail that's actually left. I think that's fantastic. Previously Grand Central, now Google Voice, but what I was unaware of is that there exist in certain rural areas of the United States small phone companies that are allowed to charge incredibly higher connection fees than any of the larger companies, so that, you know, it's a way of keeping them up and running. It's a kind of a competition leveling solution that I guess the FCC put into play a long time ago. So they were able to charge almost 100 times higher rates just to connect to their network from an outside place. This is really kind of strange when you actually think about it. And what the companies have basically come out and said, even though there was an injunction filed in the FCC last year by a lot of the large carriers, they basically said there's a situation called traffic pumping, where things like illicit phone lines and party lines and all other kinds of strange different telephony practices take up residence within these small rural networks, because since they charge such high rates, they actually have a revenue sharing system, so that by bringing in vendors basically that have a larger call volume, they will share the higher connection fees with those vendors as a way to keep them in their small area. I think that on one hand, I kind of applaud the little guy for finding a way to kind of mess with the big guys out of pocket expenses. But on the other hand, you're looking at it and going, you know, that's really kind of dirty pool. Now, apparently, there exists something called carrier neutrality. And it's common carrier. Basically, it says anything that connects into the system has to accept calls from absolutely anywhere and deliver those same phone calls to anywhere without prejudice. So AT&T is accusing Google Voice, since they exist as a telephony entity in AT&T's mind, of not delivering calls to those networks. Google wants to not deliver calls to those networks so they don't have to pay the large connection fees. And Google's Voice's response is that we're not technically a carrier, because you actually have to have a landline or a cell phone to attach to the Google Voice number in order to use it. So who knows where this is going to go? But I'm kind of hurting to say, but I'm actually siding with the large telcos on this one. Google Voice, if they really want to say that they exist for carrier neutrality and they exist for, you know, net neutrality, as they said, then they really have to connect the numbers to those things no matter what. So if they're going to offer a free service, they have to find some way around it. There is, however, an open docket in the FCC currently that says they're trying to find a way to limit the connection fees on those entities. So I thought that was pretty cool, and wanted to pass it along to all of you out there. Next little thing that we have up for you here is actually one of the strangest gadgets that I have ever seen here. This is called a Maruku. It is a wearable gaming eyeball robot that it works with some kind of altered or extended reality games, that where you could walk around subway stations, you could walk around all kinds of, you know, normal public events, and this eyeball would rotate around and actually see characters and creatures and recognize people from who exist and play within the same game as you, and you would have to act out certain things within the extended reality game, like, I guess, capturing a quote-unquote zombie. Now, these entities don't necessarily exist in real-time space, so you're basically walking around with this really strange, freaky eyeball in a Tokyo subway station, taking and capturing ghosts and goblins that don't exist. The strange things that I can think about this is that it would kind of be easy to to kind of tweak the eyeball to actually recognizing people that you would like to, that untoward influences would like to have kidnapped, and that, hey, within the confines of the game, the person was supposed to be kidnapped, and hey, they're going to play at resisting arrest, so to speak. So there's whole kinds of strange things that can actually branch out of these alternate and extended reality games. I'm not really a big fan of them. I think they're kind of interesting to a certain extent. I think that they have their place, but some of the people in places really kind of take it to the next level. So who knows what this thing's actually going to be in the future? But right now it's just plain freaky. If you want to watch the video, it's kind of weird to see the guy wandering around with this this eyeball basically strapped to his arm. At least it's not his forehead. That's all I can say there. All right, moving on into the food and caffeinated bits section. We have a bunch of little fun things we're going to talk about. Then we're going to head you out on your way. Yes, up first we have Blood the Energy Drink. It's Blood Energy Potion. It's in a interesting little hemoglobin delivery pouch. And yeah, there's way too many vampire things out right now. And I think the whole Twilight thing has kind of really diluted the coolness that vampires once had. Everything is vampires right now. I guess at one point it was zombies, now everything's vampires. Who knows what's next? I'm kind of hoping for robots. That's my personal little hope. But so yeah, you too can have your very own blood energy potion if you really feel like doing that. Next little thing we have up for you here is an interesting little article from brewedcoffee.com. It says, tell me how you like your coffee and I'll tell you who you are. It's an interesting little article which basically says that if you like black coffee or if you like espresso, that you're considered much more of a sophisticated person, whereas if you like a latte or a cappuccino or something like that, then you're considered much more of a laid-back, kind of relaxed individual. Now, I'm not really sure. Now, the article took some objection to this. They said, you know, this is definitely a very subjective phrasing, and there's a lot of very nebulous concepts at work here. But I think maybe a larger database of how people take their coffee, if it could be built, would be really kind of interesting to play around with and see exactly what kind of correlations between, I don't know, age range, gender, anything that you could kind of plug in there. And the funny thing is, Starbucks is probably in the best position to actually have this database already built. And in fact, they probably already do. Everybody in the business world works off of their database, and Starbucks just happens to be incredibly good at building a database. And in fact, the Clover coffee machines that they actually inherited are all network connected so that it allows them to actually do so in real-time fashion. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is Decantus Wine Aerator. We might have talked about one of these before, but this is the first one that had an official name and a funny little thing. The idea behind it is that wine is supposed to be aerated to volatilize the aromatic esters. I believe I said that correctly. It's a way of actually awakening the flavor. And rather than just decanting the wine for several hours to allow it to breathe, the easier way to do it is to hold this tiny little strange funnel that actually has a bit of a twirling effect to it that properly aerates the wine. So you would pour the wine from the bottle through this little interesting little funnel and into the glasses to actually provide a correct wine enjoying experience. No word on the actual price of this thing, because every time I look over there, it's either not available or there's all kinds of other information that's up there, but there's no price, unfortunately. So there you go, and here we are. Next little thing we have for you here is Toast Tattoo. Tattoos. I always thought this was kind of fun, but I think we actually had these in my house at one point in time. But basically, you press these little things in here, and the indentations actually leave a negative indentation on your bread. And what they're saying, rather than actually baking the indentation in there, is after you put it into the toaster oven, it actually tends to darken the areas that were pressed in a little bit earlier than the rest of it. So you can actually, it's like printing on the toast. And they have a whole bunch of different things like happy birthday, love you, and all of those other stuff. The only problem is if you're going to be doing it for somebody's lunch and you're going to be sending it out on their way, it doesn't really transport well. Toast doesn't really stay nice and crispy. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is an interesting little thing that I've heard a lot of people talking about drinking green coffee and saying that it's just like drinking green tea. Here's the problem. When you drink green tea, you're drinking tea that hasn't been fermented. When you drink oolong tea or black tea, that tea has been fermented. That's the process in which tea is created from the original black green tea. When you drink green coffee, you are drinking coffee that has not been roasted. It's a completely different process. In the loosest sense, it does involve changing the chemical composition of the actual thing that you're going to be consuming. So from green coffee to regular coffee and from green tea to black tea, the chemical composition does change slightly. Different sugars are caramelized when you roast it. Different flavor profiles are actually shown through. You can actually get roasting characteristics the darker you actually roast the coffee. But it's not exactly the same. It's slightly analogous in the process in which you go from one to the other, but it's not a true one-to-one comparison. I just had to get that out there. All right, that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast, episode number 370. I'd like to thank you for sticking around. This has been kind of a long, strange, winding episode. Maybe I'll call this the winding road. It's been weird, so hopefully you stuck through to the end. Thank you so much for listening. Just remember, if you're looking for this episode, it can be viewed or listened to over at www.caffeination.com. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows are listed over at techpodcasts.com. And for any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, please feel free to email me at caffeination@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.